Pretty impressed that I'm not the resident pervert anymore. I'm feeling
Oh
a
my
lot
god, we
better.
haven't mentioned anyone's penises yet.
We don't need no masthead. We don't need no rules. Cause we're just talking about sports like a bunch of crazy ass fools.
Where is our manager? Where is our manager?
We sing when we're shit.
Hello, good evening, good night, and welcome again to another therapy session with the Masthead Free Podcast. I'm your host, Tottenham Makes Me Cry, E stands for, on Twitter. With me today, we have Bricks.
Hello, everybody.
Vin.
Hey everybody, how are you doing today?
And A1.
Hi everyone, it's A1. If you're affected by any of the issues covered in today's podcast, then please follow us all via @mastheadfreepod. You're not alone, there's always support.
It's true.
Thank you. And, well, there's no delay in the inevitable. There was the incident in Anfield where we Yunus Kabul decided that he wanted to make things difficult. Or he wanted to get Sherwood fired quickly, own goal after 2 minutes, and then the beating started right to the face. Does anybody besides Vin, because he's gone first every week, so we're going to try to get some luck this week, does
Did
anybody else
fit
want
in,
to
baby?
Go first? A1, talk
yep.
about it.
So I've got three main points to make. The first one, I found a kind of interesting and relevant story. So it's just come out today that Norwich City's players are going to reimburse the admission price for all the away fans who travelled to watch their 3-0 loss to Swansea.
Oh, man.
Apparently the squad just made the decision themselves as a thank you to the 899 fans who made what was apparently a 612-mile round trip to see their fans basically humiliate the team, basically humiliated. And, yeah, there was quite a good quote from their captain, Russell Martin. He said, "All the lads really felt for the fans at the end of Saturday's game. Hopefully this will help them with the cost of travelling to our next away game at Fulham."
well, it's so at Fulham, so.
Yeah, exactly. So they're probably fine.
Game to go to.
You could not lose that match.
Well.
Yeah. Unless you were Spurs.
Spurs.
So, yeah, I thought that was good and relevant because maybe that's a gesture that the Spurs team could consider for the match against Liverpool, which was immediately, as you said, with that 2-minute own goal, and then unrelentingly for the rest of the match, terrible. It wasn't really devastating because it wasn't unexpected, I thought. It kind of felt like...
unexpected.
No, it sort of felt like wandering into the funeral of an acquaintance by mistake. Because I sort of recognised the team, but it was like they were already dead, and they've probably been dead for a while.
I thought you were describing the funeral as Liverpool and as an acquaintance, and then I was like, you need to rethink your acquaintances because I'm not showing up to Liverpool's anything funeral.
No. It's the idea is that the Spurs performance, they were all just dead. And I think, like, Kabul, Vertonghen and Dawson all had pretty bad games. And I think they're all very good centre-backs, actually. And actually we've got Vlad back in training now as well. And I'm not sure that Kabul, you kind of mentioned, Cry, that you thought Kabul had either deliberately tried to get Sherwood sacked with their own goal or it was just kind of shit. And to be fair, it did take a deflection off the tongue end just beforehand. And
I know. It was like three steps of complete imbecile centre-back play. Like, Vertonga could have cleared it, but like he flicked it on the Kabul, and the Kabul like side-footed it like as slow as possible into the net. Like he was like watching it like in slow motion.
Kabul,
it was just
like,
so comical.
It was so bad. I thought he, like, looking at that replay, it looked like to me he was like looking down, learning how to dance when they have the footprint things that are laid out on the floor for you, and he's like left foot forward, and you're just like no.
Which is how I learned how to do Dance Dance Revolution.
Hopefully on the fields of Anfield.
Yes. I think you can't really, I mean, you obviously can't plan for those, what basically I think was kind of bad luck or some ricochets or whatever, but they seem to be happening quite a lot now, and there's all this, there's a lot of narrative at the moment about Vertonghen, how he doesn't give a shit anymore, now he's really terrible and it's because he doesn't care. But I wonder if it's because the system is letting the, kind of selling them down the river, and maybe they need a bit more of a defensive shield than Siggy and Darren Benteleb. And yeah, so at the moment there's no Kapu or Sandro.
Did you say Darren Benteleb?
I did call him Darren Benteleb.
Darren Bent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure. I thought I missed that.
I was thinking back to, like, you know, whether it's the own goal thing and, like, if the system's setting up for it. Let's think. I can picture two Gareth Bale own goals.
Oh,
one
the face.
Of them. Okay, the first one from like 2 years ago was would have been when it was the Bolton match that was canceled because of when Fabrice had the cardiac
Mwamba.
Arrest.
Yeah.
And Bale had a own goal moments before that, you know, we all forgot. And I think that the second one was the face one, which is like my favorite thing ever. Because of Lennon's face after that happened. But I mean, it's different for someone like Bale who's scoring enough goals to be like, I can take an own goal every now and then. I'm carrying this team on my back. Than somebody who is Vertonghen and whose job it is to absolutely not under any circumstance have an own goal. I don't know. I mean, my other issue with Vertonghen too is how do we feel about him limping in lightly off of injury?
I would want to quit on Sherwood too after this season. I can say last week I was all for him having the job, but now I can see why people are quitting on him. And I also, to take it a little step away, we're getting Vlad Impaler back and Adebayor back, and I think it's pretty convenient that all these injuries are starting to come back now that we have easy on paper games left.
Well, I think it's interesting about Vertonghen, too, saying I'd quit on Sherwood, but you could say that attitude showed up well within AVB's tenure as well. So I'm not sure if he's just a quitter. And I don't even want to say that we know what's going on with Vertonghen or that he is injured. He is an injury. He's trying or he's not trying because we don't really know. But no one likes looking at that kind of pissy swerve face. I don't know.
A1, do you have a third point that you wanted to raise?
Yes. I mean, just to finish off that second point, because with the centre-backs being so exposed, and I think that's why Kabul and Vertonghen and Dawson and everyone who's looked so good in the past are suddenly now looking like they're, you know, 89 years old and don't know what a football is. Because there's no defence, there's no holding midfielder in front of them, there's no high press. And we know that maybe he's not 100% trusting Kapu and Sandro. And I wondered maybe whether he'll trust Milos Velikovic, because he's been training with the first team recently. For anyone who's unfamiliar, he's a very good prospect. He used to be a centre-back with our youth team, and he was converted into a kind of ball-playing holding midfielder. Those were my main kind of thoughts. I don't know.
I think this comes down to that whole idea of maybe there's not a concrete plan. And the idea of shielding your back four can happen in many ways. It can happen with a true, like, positionally, you know, if we want to think back to when Scott Parker first got here under Redknapp, how he kind of shielded the back four. And what we think of Sandro a lot of times, just kind of sitting back there and being like, hey, you know, I'm in front of these guys. I'm going to, like, whip your ass if you come into my area. I'm going to tackle you. I'm going to pick up a yellow card a game. But it's, you know, it's going to be brutal coming through here. That's one way. Another way is you can press, and you cannot give them time on the ball. But I think just if you want a basic kind of wrap-up of our game the other day is when we finally pressed high up the pitch. And one little dummy move, I forgot which fullback it was. It might have been Flanagan. He dummied Lennon, and he sent the ball to, now I just forgot his damn name, their number 10.
Coutinho.
Yeah, Philippe Coutinho. And I was gonna say Paulinho. I'm like, no, Paulinho, it's not that. Coutinho. And Coutinho made this, he let the ball run, and he made this brilliant run.
Dead.
And he really wasn't picked up ever. And then he just smashed that ball into, you know, net. It's like, you know, there's two ways to do it, and we're proving that we can't do either right now. So I really do feel for the center backs, but I also think it's just indicative of, like, no matter what we do tactically, I think it's bound to fail right now, because I think there's a deeper issue than tactics. Yeah. I think there's disorganized tactics, and I think there's a general mutiny basically going on right now. So anyway.
I thought it was pretty cool. When you were talking about Sandro, I just had this image of Sandro as kind of an overprotective dad, and the rest of our team are like little girls.
Don't you date my daughter?
Yeah, you can't. You better not touch my center backs.
Like, what are your intentions with her at prom?
Yeah, well, they're always bad.
And then to finally wrap up my third point, which is maybe more in depth, and I feel like Bricks might be able to talk about a bit. Fuck Liverpool.
Yeah, I can't even say their name If they win the league, I swear to God, I will go ham on somebody, and it probably will be Tim Sherwood. But, you know, one other thing I wanted to take away from this match is that, oh God, you guys, some of you were probably watching the same feed. I was watching it on NBC Sports, and I mean, I know Arlo White, I adore him. He's nice. A Leicester City fan. So I know he doesn't support Liverpool, but you know, he was kind of waxing poetic, and it made me a little annoyed just because I hate Liverpool so much. But think about it, being a neutral and watching Liverpool last year compared to this year, it's kind of hard not to, never mind, fuck them. But one thing he said was Luis Suarez in the 50th minute, he's like, oh, he needs a drink of water. Oh, he's looking, he's talking to the, whatever they're called, the trainers for some water. And literally then he goes, oh, looks like Luis Suarez got his water. And, you know, he has a water bottle and he only took one swig from it. And then he tossed that water bottle away. And I'm like, that was the most American commentating I've ever heard. You know, in America, the commentators never shut up. They talk about the dumbest shit ever. And here they were giving me a play-by-play on Luis Suarez's water bottle drinking.
Well, to be fair, it was more interesting than the actual game.
But I know.
From a Tottenham perspective. I think we should just go ahead and move on. We've picked up the scab well enough. We're going to move on to the next segment, which is earlier than usual. We're going to go to, well, somebody else can do it.
Okay, so next we're going to be doing Lame of Two Halves. So welcome everyone to the Masthead Free Arena for another straight-up thrilling contest in a Lame of Two Halves. This is the segment where two of our team dedicate a solid week of research to a particular issue and then debate it for your listening delectation. This week, Cry and Vin will be debating the merits and dismerits of the High Line, which is a highly topical issue in light of Spurs' recent maulings at the hand of pacey attacks. AVB and Sherwood both seem to have experimented with the dark, sweet and faintly arousing mystery of the High Line, but has that been a stupid mistake? Now Chirpy's just getting out of the way. Oh my God, he's covered in blood! But there's no time for that, because I can see Cry coming out of the tunnel to argue for the High Line in 3, 2, 1.
As a frequent person who will hate on New York City or anybody else in the world, I have to say, though, my one experience at the High Line was a grand and masterful time. You can get any drugs you want, whether it be the white stuff, the earthly stuff, the stuff that grows under cows, or the synthetic stuff. You can get that at the High Line. There's plenty of bars for alcohol. There's plenty of women. There's plenty of men. There's plenty of both, if you know what I mean. You can also, if you're a hip-hop kind of sort such as I, there's a historical nightclub just down the street on West 23rd Street called The Tunnel, where you can go and have any ecstasy-type parties you want, hip-hop parties, alternative lifestyle parties, alternative music parties, whatever you want. The High Line is a tourist attraction unlike any other.
Well, I didn't understand any of that. Maybe that's for the best. Briggs, what did you think?
Who brings up the tunnel in the 2000 decade? What the fuck is this shit? Like, seriously, tunnel? It's like TGI Fridays, isn't it?
No, the tunnel is a historical nightclub in New York City. Listen to some more rap music.
I don't listen to rap. Wait, does Macklemore count? Because I sure don't listen to that.
Die in a tire fire.
Oh, a tire fire. This is getting worse than Spurs season. Overall, that was a very, very interesting argument. I don't know that everybody can have that experience that you're describing. And really, is it better than watching even Spurs on a shit day? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what Vin has to say. Looks like that he is about ready to come out onto the field in 3, 2, 1.
When I hear the High Line, I can only think of the abomination of Andre Villas-Boas' tenure, and allegedly, how high on paint fumes Daniel Levy was during the interview to think that it would all go well. Go on, 55th, you say. Surely you're pulling our legs. I only wish I were, dear friends. It's a little-known fact that Daniel Levy was, allegedly, a fiend for huffing paint. The embarrassment of buying David Bentley for a record fee was too much for him to take, and the lure of the can was just too much as well. Day and night he sat in his office, a fresh can, and all of its spoils taunting him, hands quivering, tears running down his cheek. Daniel asked the good Lord every night to save him from his terrible addiction, but we know how this ends. Staffers tell of terrible nights, filled with shrieks and terrible screams, when Levy could be heard from his office proclaiming that he was head cock around here, and
two,
I'll sell who I want.
One.
Poor janitors had to scrape him.
Whistle.
Wow. So it looks like neither competitor here are really paying attention to the 45-second time limit, and that may cost them. I thought that was pretty funny, that one. It seemed to have much more of a drive. I like the references to drugs. Bricks, for the expert on drugs.
Being the expert on drugs, I must say that we've mentioned drugs quite a bit in this podcast, and drugs are really, really an important part of the high line, because you have to be on drugs to have a high line that doesn't press with no holding midfielder. So the moral of the story is everybody is on drugs. I'm not sure who was more high, less high. It'll be interesting to see the viewers rate the level of incoherency on these two halves.
Just as a reminder to you guys, when we put up the fan posts for the episode, then you'll be able to vote on which you thought was better, whether it was Cry's argument in favor of the high line or Vin's argument against the high line. So do feel free to get high and sniff whatever lines you need and then vote away.
Daniel Levy is probably opening up a fresh can, you know, of Fire Engine Red right now, having a good laugh. So, you know, in his honor, huff some paint, ladies and gentlemen, huff some paint.
Oh, and as a...
smoke the ganja like a Bob Marley, the Spurs fan.
Conclusion for last week. So it was me against Bricks last week. And you voted in your literally almost single-digit numbers. We almost... it was overwhelming. We had time to individually count the votes and recount the votes. And it turned out that Bricks wins.
Yeah.
It was quite narrow. Obviously, she didn't deserve to win, but she did win, so... we've chalked that up as a 2-1 win.
I get all the drugs tonight.
Yeah, so Bricks is going to be high as a kite.
We all got to get high off of this season. So moving right along, we're going to go into a new segment that is properly titled Memories Like the Corner of My Mind, where we all discuss some of the best and worst Spurs moments of this season, last season, new season, which I'm not sure which one are we talking about.
Well, I was thinking when I was trying to block out, I don't know, it was maybe the 60th minute of this recent match. I just started thinking about stuff and painting my nails and started thinking about, okay, we've had like a lot of bad things happen and very few good things except for last week and happen this season. But compare this to last season. I know that we're not quite there yet. And, you know, it's kind of hard to make a judgment on would have been the best and worst memories of this current season. But how about last season? What was everybody's favorite and least favorite? Ben, you want to start?
Yeah, I would say I think the favorite part for me last year was this idea of watching a world-class player come into their own on Spurs and everybody kind of recognizing that he's a world-class player. I mean, obviously I'm talking about Gareth Bale here. But I think in the Spurs community, we all knew how good Luka Modric was, and we saw him become a world-class player, but there was all this kind of debate about, like, you know, was he really as good as we thought he was? And I've been supporting, I think some people might know this, since 2008, and this was the first time I got to see something on this level where Bale just really became this kind of story above and beyond, like, in the Spurs community. He became kind of this revelation, and it was really awesome to see that take place. And then some of the goals that he scored last year, I don't know how to explain those to somebody who wouldn't have seen them. Cause you know, you see a goal every week and some goals, you know, it's just like, oh, that's a beautiful goal, but he was making goals literally out of nothing just with his pure athleticism. It was all him. You know, I think sometimes we forgot how he was just kind of carrying the team. Like he was that transcendent of a star and he become that good. So I look back at that now as like a great thing, even though he was sold. I would never take back some of those goals that he scored to win us games, especially that goal against West Ham. I don't think I'll ever forget the sound that Ian Dark made in the announcer's booth to hear him basically shriek with joy when that ball went in the net. And I know that was broadcast to American fans, so I don't know if people, you know, over in England had heard that, but like it was just sheer elation of seeing somebody do something completely otherworldly. I don't think I'll ever forget that stuff. The least favorite, I think, was the narrative that we fell apart last year among the fans because Arsenal kicked on in such a fucking ridiculous way. I think we took 18 out of like the last 30 points or something like that, and that's not exactly falling apart. That's not like a crazy great run, but it's not falling apart. But there's this idea that we really fell apart, even though we had 72 points. In the way that kind of like fuels this narrative that Spurs always fuck up. I don't feel like last year we really fucked up. We just didn't get there. Like, they kicked on. That's probably my least favorite thing. It's kind of like the wallowing in that narrative.
Cry, how about you?
My favorite moment for last season, to be honest, was actually getting to watch Spurs play in Baltimore for the preseason with ABB newly in charge. We still have VDV. Bale played for like a half before he was injured. Lennon missed a goal, but that was it. It was a nil-nil draw. But it was the only time I've ever been able to watch Tottenham live in person in the stadium. It's something that our English Spurs fans take for granted because they have that opportunity just about all the time. And us and me as an American don't. It's like it's almost like to parallel with the Muslims. It's like taking a trip to Mecca, going to see Spurs play. It's like almost a once-in-a-lifetime experience for people who don't live in Saudi Arabia. For people who do live in Saudi Arabia or live in Tottenham, they almost take it for granted. My least favorite memory from last season had to be when Bale got injured in the Europa League match, and it actually gave fuel to the anti-Europa League followers that Europa League was a waste of time and it does nothing but hurt our players. And seeing Bale hurt on the ground, crying in pain, made me realize that maybe the anti-Europa League people might have a point, that Europa League is a waste of time. I don't. That's because I just want trophies, and I don't care where they come from. So, Bricks, what was your favorite and least favorite memory for Spurs last year?
I think my least favorite memory was anytime anybody got injured in a regular league game, because then I could be like, oh, yeah, well, the regular Premier League fucks up Europa competitions. Just kidding. It's not how I feel, because that's basically the same argument. But I think my least favorite, I know my least favorite moment of last season was when we played Inter Milan in the Europa League, and it was the second leg, and we thought we had it wrapped up at, I think we had played it, it's our first game at home or second game at home, I can't remember, but we thought we had it wrapped up. I think we beat them 4-1 in the first leg, and then the second leg was the worst thing I've ever seen, because although we continued to advance, it ended up going into extra time, and it was 4-4. It was disgusting. Like, I was so mad about that game. And until I saw us lose to Liverpool horribly the first time this year, I would say that was my least favorite Spurs match I've ever watched. So I'm just thinking strictly like on the pitch, when did I get most angry? And that, it would have had to have been that game despite the result. I would think my favorite part of last year I'm torn. It was echoing, you know, watching Bale, was so great, but there's three people to me that stood out last year, and it was Bale, it was Dembele, and I just miss watching Gylfi and Bale play together, and they're interchanging on the center and the left. It was just like my favorite part of last season, and it's because it probably involved my two favorite players, but they worked so well together. And I don't think I realized that how much I love that until this year, when we've been struggling to put somebody on the wing who doesn't overlap well with the person in the middle, and who isn't a true winger, and all the other issues that we've had, especially on our left side this year. So I know last year wasn't even anything super spectacular, but it was really, really seamless as Bale transitioned into, you know, playing a more central role toward the end of the season. I just, I miss watching the two of them play together.
Which clearly gives us the reason why this whole segment has been invented in the first place, so that Brooks can retrospectively roster bait about Bale and Siggy, which can no longer happen ever again. I just thought it's a good opportunity to flag up my weekly segment about Cry's psychoanalysis. So just to check here, you did just draw a parallel between Muslims going to Mecca and Tottenham Hotspur fans in England being able to go to a match every now and again. Yeah, that did happen. Yes. Okay. Because there's a Mecha Bingo in Wood Green. I think that's about as close as we can get to being Mecha. Cry, you are a terrible person.
What?
Yeah. You can't do that.
Like what Alice says, dude. You can't refute it.
Because I compared...
I'm formally trained.
Yeah, Sigmund
because
Freud.
Because I compared...
Drugs, cocaine.
To White Hart Lane to going to Mecca.
Yeah, lay your ass back that down doesn't on that matter. Couch, man.
It's just because it was psychoanalysis. It's
you just got psychoanalyzed, Cry. You can't argue with it.
Yep.
Otherwise, you're just refuting...
science.
Science and the opinions of trained medical professionals... which means that probably you're not getting any better.
I take all my scientific advice from Jenny McCarthy.
Tim Sherwood hates science. You don't want to hate science, too.
Jenny McCarthy hates your psychoanalysis and thinks it's bullcrap.
Oh, sounds like somebody needs more of the pills. So while we're doing that...
You mean the host of Singled Out? Does anybody not remember Singled Out? Is that what we're talking about here? Singled Out?
I have no idea what's going on. Oh, but Cry, I wonder if you're made angry at all by that psychoanalysis.
Okay. Here's what's really bothering me this week is anytime I defend somebody on this goddamn podcast, the very next week they do something that just makes me hate them. Case in point, Tim motherfucking Sherwood and his motherfucking defense coordinator bullshit thing that he does sitting up in the stands and just watching the match and then gets on his goddamn iPhone 3S and calling down to Les Burnham, who doesn't even have a Bluetooth in his ear, so he can't hear what he's talking about. And so all Ferdinand's got to say is, press on the ball. And the players are looking at him like, what'd he say? And then all of a sudden, boom, ball's going downfield in the back of the net. Hugo's pulling out. God damn it. Do you know how happy it made me to hear the fans, the traveling fans who spent all their hard-earned money, all their hard-earned pesos to go up to that shit place called Liverpool and then saying, where is our manager? Where is our manager? Made me so happy because finally, now that I've asked Sherwood to stay, he can get his fucking fat, lazy English ass out the door and bring in somebody proper like Jose Mourinho. And that is it.
The hell?
Jose Mourinho. I just had the melody in my head. I'm sorry. Just say sit down, Mourinho, too. So go ahead, Brix.
Okay. Brix is gone.
So 2 points here, Cry. Number one, that's not an iPhone 3S. If you know anything about technology,
I'm sorry
you
if not I'm not
see
a
the
BlackBerry
shape of the phone.
Fanboy.
That was a five. I don't think anybody here is a BlackBerry fanboy, and that's why we know it's an iPhone 5. But next would be Hugo pulling out. We know that doesn't happen. We'd like to congratulate Hugo on the one-month anniversary of his child.
Congratulations, Hugo!
One-month anniversary / birthday.
Back in the net.
Baby. You are that obnoxious person who counts their child's birth months.
Never have a child, so no.
Well, you would have a child to eat. Does that count?
Jonathan,
I don't think I'd eat a child because I wouldn't actually birth a child ever and then eat it. Like, if you could
eat
other
things.
But then
what if it was a child that somehow got near you? Like, maybe there was a crack in the door or something and it just, like, wiggled in and it was in your house and it tried to go like, Mommy, Mommy,
this conversation has to stop. We're not doing cannibalism. We're not doing cannibalism.
Free podcast.
I would not eat a child. I would not eat a child.
I just said we're not talking about cannibalism.
Was Suarez sending like subliminal messages like from the football, like from the pitch this weekend, like make us start talking about eating children? Yeah. Like biting humans?
What is wrong with you people?
Thanks, Sherwood.
No one's eating a child. I would sell it on Craigslist and make some money.
Okay.
No!
I don't think anyone can argue with it. What's wrong with that, Cry?
What's wrong with selling a child? If I don't want it and somebody else wants it, there's a market for that.
And it saves you from being eaten if you're the child.
Do you know how hard it is to adopt in the U.S.? Like, people need a black market for children.
Can we just move on to the mailbag? Let's just move on to the mailbag.
I like how me talking about knives and wielding knives on the podcast is now, like, maybe, like, the most apolitical thing or most, you know, ridiculously calm thing we've done.
Least contentious.
Allegedly. Well, also, I would just like to point out that Cry didn't really shut down until I mentioned selling a child. He was, like, more okay with me eating it.
Yeah.
Moving along, we're going to go... You have some questions from our fans this week?
I do.
So many fans.
So many fans. So we have our first question came from Dan, and the question is, would you rather take a punch from Sherwood or stand in the wall of a Heddleston free kick? And for those of you who don't know or decided to bury their heads in the sand after our loss, there was a rumor that Tim Sherwood punched somebody, and the rumors floated around it being either Vertonghen or Dawson, which I, if I can remember correctly, as rumors normally are, and only one of that would be justified. So, Vin, who would you rather take your punch? Would you rather take a punch from Sherwood or stand in the wall of a Huddleston free kick?
I would rather take a punch from Sherwood because I've been punched in the face literally hundreds of times. So I know that I could take that and then bounce back and attack that gooner, put him in a wrestling move and make him admit, while I'm pummeling his face into the ground, while I have a double chicken wing on him. It make him admit that he never really loved Tottenham and that he is scum through and through. I am pretty sure that I could not take a Huddleston kick to the balls and recover.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. And also because the Sherwood punch mostly exists in the head of Daily Mail writers. so I'd probably be fine with that because, firstly, it's good, really, to have punches in the heads of Daily Mail writers. I'm never going to have an issue with that. And secondly, because Huddleston, I really miss you. You're accurate with your shooting, and it's powerful, and it's low-drilled. I imagine that it would hit me square in the balls, and I'd never be able to have children. So
that's a good.
Definitely the Sherwood punch.
Cry.
I would take the Huddleston free kick because I don't want Sherwood's dirty hands touching me.
Yeah. It's fair.
On to our next question. Head Chicken Keeper would like to know, exactly what make of couch is best to watch football from?
So I'll take the first answer there. So very definitely a reclining couch if you're going to watch Spurs games, because then you can have everything kind of set up at the start so that you're all ready to watch the game. You've got a nice view of the TV. And then as soon as Liverpool score in the second minute, you can pull the handle on the reclining chair. And this is especially good if it's a really broken reclining chair, because then you might sustain an injury and be able to be transported to hospital where you're not going to be able to watch it. Or you're just going to fall back and then you won't be able to see it anyway. So it's and you're comfortable. That's the key. So that's what I would do.
A futon. So that when you look around, you know that things can only get better, even if your club is letting you down. That, you know, maybe one day you'll have a proper sofa. A futon. And that's more than a little autobiographical.
Oh, cry.
I would have to go with a leather couch that was pure black, so that way when my cocaine fell on it, I would know where it's at, and I could be able to sniff it off the couch instead of just wasting it.
That's actually really logical.
My answer would be I do not watch I don't watch matches on the couch. I sit on the ground. And so everybody can see my forehead.
Because you're a hippie.
Because I'm a hippie. It's not comfortable sitting on a couch. It's better to sit on the ground.
Then you can feel the cosmic energy.
It's an honor of, I think it's what we call the dad bracket on Sports Blog Nation a few weeks ago, where napping on the floor was a very strong contender for the Final Four.
That's cool.
The last question is from Chris. And he wants to know what the fuck Sherwood was sitting on during the entire game at Anfield, and why didn't whoever he called on the phone take care of said foreign object?
Oh, I got it. He was sitting on another phone, and he kept calling it so it would vibrate onto his other phone.
What's that jingling on my butt? Anybody else?
I know when I'm licked, and I know when to shut up, and there's no way I'm going to do anything better than that. So I just think I'll go on that one. Yeah.
Can we please not discuss licking immediately after that joke?
All right.
We're going to move along, Vin.
Yeah. So, hey everyone. I'm 55th Vin. You know me. So let's talk to some animals. Hey chicken. How's it going? Name's Chirpy, you say. I like that. You don't look as insane as you used to. Why is that? Do you get to a good therapist, or are you just on Xanax like the rest of us? Oh, strong, silent type, huh? I can respect that, Chirpy. Say hello to your mother for me. Now I'm going to talk to a goat. Hey, goat. How's it going? You look like a Roberto. Can I call you Roberto? Cool. I think goats get a bad name, but I like your hair. I'm going to give you my email. We can do an interview together so people can see the real you. It could be huge. Think about it. Now I'm going to talk to a donkey. Hey, donkey. How's it going? I'm 55th Vin. I root for Spurs. Why are you sitting in the stands, donkey? Wouldn't you rather be with all the other donkeys when things are going bad? I think that's what I do. If you stop being so stubborn and disagreeable with everyone, people maybe will actually listen to you. Oh, I see how it is, donkey. I can take a hint. Well, since you're on your phone now, say hello to your mother for me.
Wow. That sounded your voice sounds a lot like Mark Wahlberg.
Did it?
Yeah.
Huh. Marky Mark and Funky Bunch.
That's really odd. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, it's strange.
Well, we're going to move along. We're getting close to the end, guys. So let's go ahead and preview our upcoming match, which is against the great Sunderland. Oh, Sunderland. Don't we have a former Sunderland fan in the... Oh, yes, we do. A1, tell us about Sunderland.
Hey, yeah. So I'm not a former Sunderland fan. I'm a Sunderland fan kind of by bloodline. So on my dad's side, my great-granddad played for Sunderland, and all of that side are kind of from Sunderland. So I do keep up with Sunderland news. Lately, it's not been great. But Poyet, Gus Poyet, former Spurs man, with Maurizio Tirico as his assistant, they've both been... bringing a much better style of football to Sunderland, and they've turned the team around following Paolo Di Canio's terrifying explosion of Tim Sherwoodian rabble-rousing rhetoric and sort of passion-demanding. And now they keep it on the ground, and they mostly rely on the on-loan Fabio Barini, who's just back from injury in the last game, and the somewhat mercurial Adam Johnson, who's in the form of his life basically now in the mid to latter part of this season, probably with a bit of an eye on the World Cup. Altidore, a sorry cry, has been a real disappointment, as probably has Stephen Fletcher. Neither of them have really been firing. The defence is a sieve, so we can probably get at them there. Vito Minone, is the former Arsenal loser, is no Simon Mignolet. And Craig Gordon, one of the most expensive goalkeepers in world football, is gone now, and that's a bit of a sad story. It's really fallen apart for him. But basically, Sunderland are very much in danger now of relegation, and they may well represent, I think, our sort of Fulham game from last season, where we bizarrely kind of lost and nobody saw it coming. Because they're a good side, and they're playing much better than the results suggest. I think they're probably due a fluky win, and that's really our specialty. So I'm a bit worried. But to be honest, I'm always split when Sunderland and Spurs play. And this time around, I think Spurs have got fuck all to play for and Sunderland need the points. So I'm not going to be that sad when we inevitably lose to Sunderland.
I was going to say that for me, when he came back, the danger man is Barini. He is the guy that scares me. Adam Johnson obviously can be that too when he's in the mood. He's actually a really good player. There's absolutely no reason why Spurs should lose this match. But I really think at this point, it's kind of, I really don't know what to expect from the team. I could sit here and like talk about, well, we should see this and we should see that. But I feel like that's just a straight up waste of my time. I want to see players go out there and just seriously fight as hard as they can, for the shirt. That's all I really care about. I want to see some good individual performances. I want to see the center backs actually look like they practice together. I would like to see some kind of, some kind of unity between the attack and the midfield. There's a lot I'd like to see, but I'm not going to really sit here and try to break down what the key is. We have better players than they do. We should win. So I can just pass that off to somebody else.
Well, I kind of want to go back to what A1 said about Fletcher and Josie not performing. I think it's okay for Stephen Fletcher not to perform at this point. It is not okay for Josie to... I mean, he's not cut out for this league, so it seems, and I think that a lot of people saw that coming, and one of those people was not cry. I don't know. I'm very neutral on Sunderland. I don't really... If we don't win this, I'm going to be probably really pissed, because I think we need to show the mental resilience of being able to come back from horrible losses, even when we have, quote-unquote, nothing to play for. We do. The season ends May 11th. And we need to play for Europa, and we're very, very close. I mean, we're out. We could very well lose Europe altogether, and we should be winning every single game from here on out. And I'm going to be very disappointed if we don't. And I know that's pretty unfair, but that's how I feel.
All right, I'm about sick and tired of all you guys shitting and talking trash and talking down on future Spurs captain, future World Cup winner Jose Altidore. And if there's one team that's going to make Jose look like a world-class Premier League player, that is the Tottenham Hotspurs back line of broken ankles and shattered dreams. We're going to lose this match horribly. The fans are going to be all over Sherwood and Daniel Levy again. We're just going to, our capitulating season is going to continue to go down the drain. We're done, we're dusted, we're doomed, and Sunderland is just going to be the start of the horrible offseason.
The other thing I want to, go ahead, Vin.
I was just going to say, if Jose Altidore scores in this game, I'm going to openly root for Mexico in all games during the World Cup.
Well, I was going to say that, I mean, Cry has a point. If Josie's going to prove his worth or try to prove his worth at this point, it would be against Tottenham, but it would not be against Tottenham Hotspurs. It'd be against Tottenham Hotspur. So I don't know what fucking team you're talking about, Cry, but my team is the team of champions that do not lose to Sunderland.
Yeah, he's disrespected the Spurs there.
It's not the first time. I let it slide last time.
The Tottenham Hotspurs. Just also before we move on, because maybe we're the main source of news for people, Adebayo, Kirakesh, and... come on! We've got to have some faith in ourselves. So Paulinho, Kirakesh, and Adebayo are all possibly back in contention. Soldado might have done his hamstring, might possibly be in. That's the Spurs news.
Poor guy.
It's pretty convenient that all these guys come back when we have easy matches now, instead of when we actually the hard eyes of March matches with Arsenal, Chelsea, and Liverpool. But yeah,
that's inconvenient.
Them cowards. Never would do that.
That's horrible.
And a segment we haven't done in a while, maybe that's why we've been losing so much, is Fuck, Marry, Kill. And then this week our contestants are going to be Kabul, Rose, and Townsend. Who would like to go first? A1.
I think that one of them pretty much sells itself, so just going to get it out of the way. I would kill Danny Rose because he's already 10%. He's eternally 10% dead. He's only ever 90% alive. So just put him out of his misery. Leaving me to choose between having all the funky, sexy times with Eunice Kabul or Andros Townsend, I feel like it would be cleaner to have sex with Eunice Kabul because Andros Townsend kind of shoots everywhere. A lot of it would miss.
Imagery. Yeah.
And so that would lead me to marry Andros Townsend, and hopefully he will mature under my tutelage into a fine winger.
Okay, I can go. I'm going to kill Danny Rose, but not because of anything that happened this week. I'm going to kill Danny Rose because he keeps tarnishing my memories of the goal against Arsenal, where it was like he was at an all-time high, and everything that happens...
Premier League debut!
Yeah, it's like he keeps depreciating, and eventually I'm going to like have these awful memories of him. I'm going to watch that, and I'm going to be like, oh, fuck Danny Rose. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but it's just like... I feel like it's depreciating.
He's the next David Bentley.
I don't want that moment to ever be like, oh, God, he was shit. So I'm going to kill him before I just permanently hate the guy.
Sorry, Danny.
I am going to... I'm going to marry Eunice Kabul because that's probably way too much man for me. And from my understanding of it, married people don't have sex. So basically, I'll just have a huge bodyguard around me. So that's my thoughts. And then I'm going to, I'm going to fuck Andros Townsend because, you know, watching the way he plays and the frenetic pace, I imagine that'll be over quickly. So
yeah. Good luck cleaning up afterwards. That's what I'm
saying. Yeah, I didn't know how messy and he didn't just shoot everywhere on the football pitch. Yeah. And to, you know, but I already made the decision. I got to stick by it. So hopefully it's over quickly. And bring a towel.
pretty impressed that I'm not the resident pervert anymore. I'm feeling.
Oh my god, we haven't mentioned anyone's penises yet.
I think that we're about ready to, because I'm gonna go now. So I would kill. I'd kill Townsend. I mean, like I mentioned in previous episodes, he's responsible for our whole downfall this season. He's responsible for getting AVB shit canned. He's responsible for Bentaleb starting all the time. He's injuring
Eric Lamella as well.
Injured Eric Lamella. Like, this guy has done so much damage to the club, and we are so blind to his tyranny that we need to kill him.
The satanic rituals as well.
Yeah, it's
crazy ass shit. So, and then that leads me to, I'm going to have sexy time with Rose. I don't know why. I think it'll be, again, I think it'd be pretty quick because he can't, like, his toe injury. Like, he's always injured. Like, just, like, get in there. It's all about me. And then we're done.
More insight into your sex life. Beautiful. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Sexual debut.
Oh, my God. And then I would marry Kabul because he's French.
Okay.
That's a good choice.
Yeah.
All right. I guess I'm last. So out of all my choices, I probably have to marry Kabul because he's most likely to be able to, he's going to stay at home since he's always hurt. Danny Rose and Andrews Townsend, that's a hard one. I probably would have to just have Townsend as my hit and run because he can never stay in one place for a long time, so it's not like he's going to be home ever. And I'll just have to kill Danny Rose because, well, the best memories of him are already distanced in the past, so might as well kill him while he was on top. So if you guys disagree, don't forget to shout out, go talk to us and disagree with us on our Twitter handle at MashedFreePod. That's Masthead, MASTHEADFEFRE. I can't spell to the end. Drunk.
I'm going to say it in, I'll say it here in proper English. MashedFreePod. Find us on Twitter. Don't trust Cry to ever pronounce anything or spell anything correctly. And tell us, would you marry Eunice Kabul?
Yeah, A1, I think you should talk to the English people so they can understand this, because it's apparently me and Cry sound alike to Englishmen.
Yeah, so. You do. All three of you sound exactly the same. So just
I take
remember.
Most offense to that. I'm going to throw that out there.
Shut
you
up,
don't sound like no damn white person from Minnesota.
Say hello to your mother for me.
Who is white on this podcast?
This is Anakin. Like, okay, so we've got our Twitter at MastheadFreePod, and our iTunes as well, so you can search us there either just by searching MastheadFreePodcast, or if you're incredibly tech savvy, you can use our short link, tinyurl.com/MastheadFreePod. So it's the same as the Twitter handle.
All right, so does anybody else have anything to add? Any quirks, any funny stories to tell?
I don't think any of us have ever had anything to add of any value.
I have something I'd like to add.
Yeah, sure. And after that I'll say one thing too. So, oh,
God. So Tim Sherwood, really? I mean, how did this rumor start with Tim Sherwood punching somebody in the locker? I'm just, like, completely baffled by this. And after our second goal to Liverpool, I just, like, didn't go online for, like, 48 hours. I was just like, I can't because, you know, people get stupid. And then I come back to hear all these jokes about Sherwood punching somebody. And my first thought was he's going to punch somebody like Eriksen or Gylfi that are, like, super fragile and, like, super weird. Or he's going to punch Soldado or, like, something. And then you hear that it's Dawson, and you just know that that can't happen. Then you hear it's Vertonghen, and you're thinking, oh, my gosh, that might actually be plausible because a lot of people might actually want to punch Vertonghen. And then there was a rumor that it was Rose. I mean, it's been everywhere. So the funniest thing about that is I noticed that both Soldado and Lennon took to their social media and said, the rumors aren't true. It's crazy how some of these rumors start. But how do they start is my question. And is Tim Sherwood capable of punching somebody? Like, Aaron, do you think he would go that crazy and actually do it?
Aaron Lennon went further than that. He called it bollocks, which I thought was nice.
What I'd like to say is that I don't think I'm going to write any more your team is getting relegated pieces because we've lost 10-0. After I've written those two separate pieces, like by a combined score of 10-0. And while they're fun, it's funny to take the piss out of really good teams before we play them. It's not so funny to look at those articles like a day later and go like, oh wow, we really, yeah, I mean, I should start writing about Tottenham Hotspur like every week. But anyway, yeah, so I might retire that bit. So that's all I got.
I have to say that I thought it was pretty funny watching all the YouTube videos of the fans in the stands after the match. They were singing to Sherwood or to the fans, and they were just very unhappy. It's almost to the point where we're a joke, but somehow we're still in Europa League place. And I don't know what to make of this season, and I just can't wait for the season to be over. This has been, like, the worst season of support Spurs in my entire life.
We're only in the Europa League place just because of Manchester City winning the FA Cup, correct? Because Everton's ahead of us. We're in sixth.
Right. Yeah, we're in sixth.
And we're barely holding on because we have to think about who has games in hand, and that's both United and Everton.
If anybody's feeling punchy, you can do the outro. We've had bad luck ever since I've been doing it, so.
Well, what I'll say is let's have a good week, everybody. Keep your heads up. You know, at the end of the day, we're having a kind of miserable season, but we are still in sixth, and we can't lose hope. We got to keep going on to the next week. And also, you know, that possibility that we might have something even crazier happen this week. So come on, you Spurs. Hope to hear you next week. A1, anything to say?
Yeah, come on, you Spurs.
Bricks?
Don't punch people.
Cry.
Josie for Spurs. Josie for Spurs.
Shut up, Cry.
Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to follow us at Masthead Free Pod. Talk to you next week.